Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody.
Happy Thursday, ladies and gentlemen. How's it going?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you for asking, Kevin. Hey, good. We got a lot of good feedback from our interview with Mr. Bart Scheer.
Oh, did we?
Yes.
Fun chat.
Yes, people seem to be enjoying it. He was a fun person to talk to. He just took control of the interview and was like, let's go.
It was like, kind of exactly the kind of interview I would have expected with Bart Scheer. I mean, it was very, you know, very cerebral. It was sort of very artistic and very, it was just, but it was lovely. It was kind of different from other interviews.
Very different. I kind of feel like, I'll be honest with you, I've never felt so stupid before in my life. I was like, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I feel like I'm a bad theater person.
No, this man is a true, you know, craftsman of the theater who has, you know, worked so hard and it's cool to really realize that he started out in regional theater and he worked and worked and worked, and then every once in a while you make it and you go to the Broadway and you do the big commercial stuff. But really fascinating to hear his background that is not rooted in commercial theater and how it still happened to him.
Absolutely. It was really cool to hear. And he's offered, and we'll probably take him up on it, he's offered to come back and do a part two and give us more insight. So
we'll have to do some readings. We'll assign you guys some readings as well. Some
check your syllabus.
Perhaps. Yep. Check exactly. We'll send you the syllabus. And no, tongue in cheek though, because it fascinating chats, and I think it's really important that we capture them and we really get his brain on record.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. So what did you do this week? Or where are you going this weekend, I should say?
Oh, I'm going camping this weekend.
It's going to rough it.
We are going on a little family camping trip upstate New York. There's some diamond mines or crystal mines called, there's a Herkimer crystal, Herkimer diamond. It's a quartz kind of quartz.
I have to look this up. You've said this a couple of times.
Yeah, Herkimer. No, and it's a specific kind. You can look it up. I mean, it's in museums. It's a Herkimer diamond. And so you can mine for these things. In fact, when I was a kid, I grew up, we would go camping a lot. I grew up in Elmira, New York, which is 5 hours or 4.5 hours west, western New York. And we would go to this town of Herkimer, and where these are. And we would go camping, and you could take your pickaxe and your little hammer, and you'd hammer the rock, and you would find these crystals, these diamonds inside of it. It's really cool.
So virile.
We're going to go to a campground that has their own mining adventure. So you can only mine there if you're camping at the campground. So it's not going to be too crowded. And they turn over it's an open pit basically. And they don't drop any diamonds there. You literally are finding them. And there's people there that are hardcore hunters that had set up tents and set up their excavation area. But we're sort of like the bottom feeders that sit in the back and just get all the scraps. But man, I've gotten the size of a golf ball. I got a crystal. I'll show it to you next time you visit.
When can I see it? Okay, great.
Yeah. It's really fun. I was going to go get it. It's really, really fun, Robin. So yeah, we're going to go, we're going to see our friend Amanda, and we're going to hang out, and we go camping with her every year or every other year. So yeah.
Hey, Amanda. Hey, how come we've never gone camping?
I want to take you camping.
You don't think I can rough it, can you?
I'd like to see you rough it. We've got a tent. It's a six-person tent, and I'm sure you could be inside there with us and with the family, with the baby. It would be fun.
Is that going to be a problem?
So do I. It'd be great. It's only
do you really?
The one. Only Sutton suffers. Yeah, when I'm on my back, I snore. So I usually
Me
sleep on my
too.
Side.
You I know, I can. I cannot sleep sitting up, and I cannot sleep on my back.
Huh?
I can only sleep on my side.
Interesting.
Yeah,
it's healthy. Left side is good.
Thank you.
There you go. You're welcome.
So I'm so happy,
for the
listeners.
Theater, stay for the sleep help.
You've all aged with us. You've all aged with us. You really want to get a good night's sleep? Just watch Amelie. That'll put you out pretty fast.
10 years from now, wait till a conversation. It'll be even better.
Pills,
back exercises.
I always love when older people get together and they talk, because it's like a pill. Like, what do you take? I'm on Cialis. Oh, I'm on Wellbutrin. Oh, I'm on this. And one day we'll be like that.
We will be. We already are starting to do that. See, here we go.
Yeah, we're talking about our bedroom habits. Hey, trivia was fun last weekend.
I had a blast. Great group of people. So much fun. I look forward to it. I love how convivial and fun everyone is, and we get to socialize and chat and laugh. Oh my gosh, I always am laughing the whole time. It's great.
And Kevin sounded great as always. I love.
Oh, thank you. It was so much fun. It was a good. I mean, come on, the 1960s. You can't go wrong.
Absolutely. And once again, folks, don't forget, this weekend we're not doing it. Kevin's off camping and I'm going to catch up on some sleep. But we're going back the next weekend, which I think is August 22nd, Saturday, August 22nd. And that's going to be revivals. Ooh, the category is revivals. The category is revival realness.
Dun, 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 dun. Walk, walk. That's a RuPaul's Drag Race joke.
Thank
for
you.
Those of you who know. And
there's Miss Katya dressed up as Lauren Ambrose being fired from Funny Girl.
Six seasons ago, but yes.
6 seasons ago.
Yes, very good. Very good, yes. Rob. Very good.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I know a little bit about the Drag Race.
So you're gonna rest up this weekend, take it easy, going anywhere? No, of course not.
No. I've got work to catch up on. We've got this benefit concert that's coming up. So I've been working on that, and it's been really fantastic.
And if we wanted to see that, is it private or is it open to the public?
You know what? It is open to the public. We'd like you to make a donation to watch it. And we're actually currently in discussions of who is going to host it, on which website we're going to host it.
We're still working that out.
Yeah, there's a couple of really great options, and we're just trying to figure out what would be the best for the patrons. So I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast yet. So I'm directing a fundraiser for the Hudson Guild, which this I was honestly unaware of until I was approached to direct it, which is there are so many individuals on the west side of New York in either like artists housing or assisted living or Section 8 housing that rely on like Meals on Wheels programs, on food delivery programs. And during quarantine, that was not really happening. And so restaurants that weren't able to take patrons were cooking food and they were dropping them off to these individuals. And now that the restaurants are back open, there's a lot of individuals, mostly artists, like people from our community that aren't getting food delivered to them. So the Hudson Guild we're doing this fundraiser for them because they're going to be picking up the mantle of that. And so our theme is, it's called West Side Stories. Thank you. I came up with the title.
I like it.
Thank you.
Great graphic. Great graphic.
Oh my God, they did such a great job. And it's celebrating New York in the 1970s. So it's a bunch of anecdotes from people like Bruce Valanche and Ron Cephas Jones and Holland Taylor, Cheetah Rivera, that are going to tell like anecdotes in the 70s. And then people are going to sing 70s songs. And some of
Golden Rainbow?
Golden Rainbow, I think, was 68.
Oh, right, stupid.
But I'll still sing it. I'll still Golden Rainbow.
I love that you were like, I think above it's 1968. Me. It's 1968. It is.
Is it 1968? I think.
No,
I know
it's not the same. Featured in William Goldman's the season,
that's
wasn't it?
That's true. Mm-hmm. I love Golden Rainbow. Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong.
Doesn't matter. Does not matter at all.
I've got to be me. I got to be me.
Not cliche at all.
Do it or die. How dare you come after Walter Margs? Do it or die. What is it? Do it or die. Willing to try. I've gotta be me. Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Thank you. Thanks for taking the option up there too. Wow. Nice.
What else would you do?
Exactly.
What else would you do? I could go lay it. I've gotta be me. How would he do it? Hold on. Do it or die. Willing to try. I gotta be me. Yeah, I got it. He sounds good.
You still got it. It depends on what singers, Goulet is.
Oh, yeah. It depends. Depends on where I am.
Is it 1980s Goulet or is it 1960s Goulet?
Oh, 60s was easy. That was marijuana. 70s was shrooms. 80s was coke. 90s was Cialis. Got a little hardening of the arteries. Got to unclog it. Got some atrial fibrillation right here, right in this heart.
Bob.
Right here, right there, right in that ventricle. See that there. Bruise? That's not from surgery. That's where Carol once threw an ashtray at me because she found that I spent the night with Lorna Luft. I said, babe, nothing happened. She's not Liza. Ooh, shouldn't have said that. And our singers include...
Yes.
Our singers include... It's such a great group, and I'm watching these clips, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. They're so good. Laura Benanti, Megan Hilty, Andy Carl and Orfei, the Schuyler
Kate
sisters,
Baldwin.
Kate Baldwin, the Schuyler sisters from Los Angeles, Sabrina Sloan. It's a really fun group of people. So when we find out where it's going to be hosted, we will post it. But don't donate to Hudson Guild because it's just a fantastic, fantastic cause.
We should add that charity to our or that organization to our list for our Broadway trivia. Actually,
that's a great idea. Our next trivia that we're doing, not this Saturday, but the Saturday after, is going to go to Impact Lebanon to help the people that are suffering in Lebanon because of that god awful explosion over there. My Lord. Anyway, so let's turn it up. Let's raise the roof. Hey, I watched some Wild Party, by the way. I watched some bootlegs of the Wild Party. I just want you to know that.
Okay. Okay.
I just want you to know that.
I'm proud of you.
I watched Idina Menzel do Life of the Party for the first time.
Okay. Okay. Oh my God. You're not even joking, are you?
No, it was really good.
You guys, does anyone else understand the problem with this conversation right now? Are you guys listening to this?
What?
Any long-time listeners?
Idina Menzel. She sang Life of the Party.
What Wild Party do I want Rob to listen to, you guys? I could literally throw my microphone out the window right now when it's storming.
You want Toni Collette?
Wrong Wild Party, Rob.
Welcome to my party, baby. Where's the ice?
Listen to that
Welcome to my party. That one? Yes. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Performance is a revelation.
Who's Toni Collette?
Toni Collette.
I love her.
Eartha Kitt is amazing. Norm Lewis is amazing. Pinkins is amazing.
Okay, I will.
Sally Murphy.
Oh my God.
Sally
okay.
Morber.
Well, I got okay.
Clam.
I will get a bootleg of. I will watch. I will watch the Lacusa version. Okay, I will watch.
Oh, now we got to have this conversation again. Okay, all right.
Well, it's you know.
I'm so glad you came to me. So proud of yourself for watching the other one. But thank you. That's great. That doesn't help at all. So
okay, this weekend I know what I'm doing. Somebody hold me accountable. Somebody hold me accountable. Oh my God. All right,
it's only taken a couple years.
I will get there. Hey, how's Head of the Class? You enjoying those episodes of Head of the Class on YouTube?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
I don't know what that is.
Hey, exactly. You have a favorite thing? Because I got a favorite
I
thing.
I do. I'm actually really excited about my favorite thing.
Are you? Who wants to go? You want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. Because I think yours is going to be more entertaining. Mine's more of like a history lesson. I discovered this show and it's one of those shows that I'm sure you probably have these on your mental list. It's shows that I know that are iconic or I'm told are iconic. And I kind of don't know why, because when I listen to the cast recording, I'm always like, no, this is interesting, but it's sort of like, I don't quite get it. And this is a show that predates Oklahoma. And yet, for all, it's never been revived, even though it was a hit at the time. It was a major hit, and it really revolutionized the way that we that they were looking at the way that we approach writing musicals, or not even musical comedies, but some sort of art form that is a play with music, if you will. And so I often think of that this musical, because it was a musical, sort of paved the way for other shows and other composers. So the show that I would like to talk about is a show from 1941. In his iconic show, because the theater was not, there was not a lot of new shows because the war was raging, you have to understand. And a topic that was actually very, very new to American this is going to give it away, because this is a topic that no one had ever really talked about on stage, let alone in a musical. Yes?
Is Mr. Thomas, is the topic psychoanalysis?
It is, Robert. It is. Very, very good. What is the show?
The show is called Lady in the Dark.
That is exactly correct. I'm so
impressed. Awesome.
Good job. So this is sort of like a history lesson, perhaps. And since you're a history teacher, you're going to be really good at this helping. But I kind of went down a deep dive on this show, because I've been aware of it. I read Act One. I read Moss Hart's book. I love Moss Hart. I love Kurt Weill. I love his stuff. Street Scene's one of my favorite scores. I mean, not one of my favorites, but I enjoy it a lot. I like his stuff. I think that what Kurt Weill was trying to do with American musical theater is where certain writers like Michael John Lacusa and Stephen Sondheim, and that they sort of carried that forward. And what I mean is that he wrote music that was way more complex than the average musical comedy score was. Even Gershwin would write his musical comedies and he would simplify his scores. Like, the harmonies weren't very complex. They were very simple. And I'm not talking about Porgy and Bess, of course. I'm talking about like his shows that he did in London, like Primrose and like the Throwaways. Like, he wrote very simple. Kurt Weill, like, wrote, if you look at his scores, if you're a musician and you know music, it is not fundamental harmony. It's very complex, because he was trying to convey the emotion of the situation, you know, in this piece. Famously, Ira Gershwin wrote the lyrics, but famously, Moss Hart and Kurt Weill got together and they wanted to write something together. And as the story goes, they both had no desire to write a musical comedy, what was popular in the day. They had absolutely no desire to do that. So they kind of went their separate ways. And then they got the idea that what if they did something on their own that they could then, you know, create a different form, a different idea. And so this is very much a play about a woman. And this, there is problems. There is major problems. There's a reason why this has not been revived. But At its core, it is about a woman, a very strong, powerful woman in the fashion industry. She's the head of Allure magazine, and they take pains to tell us that she's very, you know, dresses very conservative and doesn't let her femininity fly. Of course, this is very before the feminist movement, so we have to filter, understand that 1941 is not 2020. What they did, they used psychoanalysis to help her through her process of healing. Now, in the musical, she gets healed in 9 days or whatever it is. It's like absurd. But the point is still made that it is about, you know, turning this major, her this conflict in her life of trying to decide who she wants to be with and what she wants to do with her life and how that's reflected in her, she has a breakdown. And the musical aspect of this musical is when she goes into her dream sequences that she's describing either to her doctor or she sleeps and she passes out and she has these sequences and they become these fantastical, semi-operatic, you know, operetta-ish pieces. And it is just, I read the libretto, I listened to the score, I followed along the score, and I was just blown away by it, Rob, and I was so impressed by it. They did it last year. A former guest, Ted Sperling, did it with the Master Voices, and Vicky Clark was the lead. I think that there's many problems with the piece. I think they solved one of the more feminist problems is having the doctor played by a woman. Amy Irving did it when they did it recently, which helps a lot of it because it's really weird, some of the things he's saying, and some of the writing is in 1941 was very heavy-handed because this was so new, and Moss Hart was definitely underlining certain parts in the piece. But as far as what I want to talk about is the integration of singing, acting, music, and that stylization, and how I don't think we give it enough credit really for what it did to writers and teaching them that, hey, maybe a musical could actually be more than just toe-tapping songs that make you feel good, but the actual music and lyrics can help give depth and character and conflict and resolution and all the things that we take for granted today. But they were really experimenting. And this experiment was a major hit. All the reviews went crazy over it. People lost their mind because, and again, it's because they were musicalizing a very controversial topic. Even in the piece, even in the musical, there's a character who totally makes fun of the psychoanalysis, like it's all just quackery, you know. And now we're so used to that as well. You can call your therapist on the phone. On it, there's an app for it, you know. But at this time period, you have to understand that this is very, very new. And so this one individual has a problem and she solves it through this sequence. And so it's really cool. And also I'm trying to think of other musicals that deal with mental health issues. You know, this is literally a musical in 1941 on a clear day, next to normal. I mean, I'm sure there's others, but it's really interesting. So I would challenge you to listen to The Lady in the Dark, but as you listen to it, and there's really no, the only real complete recording is, there's a London one from 1997 with Maria Friedman, but there's also the Rhys Stevens from 60s or 50s, but that's a very complete recording. And that is because Gertrude Lawrence played the role originally. I wish I could go back in time and see her on stage, but you can't. And there's some songs of her, but I would say the Rhys Stevens recording that's on Spotify, Apple Music, listen to it, but follow the synopsis. So you really get the context, because the problem I always had when I've listened to this score before is I just didn't understand the context and why these songs were sung. But once you get that, you really can get into the head and understand like just how this music and lyric serves the story in a way that had never been done before, really, in 1941. I know Showboat, of course, but this was another level. This is like psychological and real analytical, and there's monologues in this. I mean, it is a play, but it is full on a musical. So my favorite thing that I discovered is A Lady in the Dark, and I just highly recommend you go check it out or at least just learn about it, because it's really a really fascinating show.
I am so happy you picked that. We have never discussed that show on here. And talk about a transformative show. Talk about a transformative show. I remember the first time, I've never seen a production of it, but there's a movie version of it that I watched years and years ago. And I think it's Ann Southern,
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I think so. And it's only, they've cut almost all the songs except like the Jenny song and My Ship. So it's like, it's very scaled down. It's not even like what was, of course, because they always did that with the movie musicals.
I feel like it was Ann Southern. And Danny Kaye was in it, right?
Danny Kaye was, so that's, here's the other thing. So Danny Kaye made his Broadway debut in the stage version in 1941. And then I believe he did then do it, do the film. I'm just going to look up the film.
So it's Ginger Rogers. I'm
it
sorry.
Is Ginger
it's
Rogers.
Ginger Rogers, that, not Anne Southern.
No, that's okay.
Sorry, folks.
But they cut most of the songs except for a couple. And Danny Kaye, oh no, Danny Kaye did not do it. Misha Auer did it, whoever that is.
Sorry, Misha.
I know. Oops, my bad.
Sorry, Danny.
And that Rhys Stevens recording is from 1963. Lehman Engel produced it. Adolph Green is on it. And it's a good example of it.
I remember the first time I read it, because it came in that Stanley Richards like 10 Great Musicals anthology book from the 70s, right? So I remember reading it, and I was like, I got to the first scene, and it was like there was no song. It was just like, we're in a psychoanalyst's office, and he's like, Miss Liza, come in, and like you're like, do they sing? And it's like, page, there's no singing. Next page, there's no singing. Next page, I was like, do they sing in this fucking thing? I was like, oh my God. And then they do. And you're like, oh, okay. But yes, it's a totally upending of what structure could be. The idea that it's mostly, it's all numbers in her head, right? Is that right?
All numbers, yes. There's, yes, all dreams. They were all her dreams. And there's four different dreams, you know.
But it's never like, I'm going to the psychiatrist.
No, not at all. I mean, within that, there's things that are like, but it all has to do with her, what's going on in her, and the people in her life are then in the dream as different characters, but still sort of like fulfilling the function that they have in her life. So it's very, and so it's, you know.
Like Wizard of Oz. Yes.
It was all a dream.
All a dream.
I'm really fascinated by it, and I wanted to actually understand why. And so I finally sat down and read it and really dug in, and I'm really glad I did, because it really, I think we have a lot to thank them for taking such a big risk. And I'm amazed that we really don't, it's not redone, it's, we've never been revived.
Well, I know, I'm so sorry to interrupt, I'm sorry, go ahead, please. I was going to say, I know Encores did it in the 90s with Christine Ebersole. Right. She was Liza.
I would love to have seen that.
Yeah, me too. I wonder if that's at the public library.
I wonder if it is.
We can maybe go. When the library opens again, we can go see it. Maybe we'll just call Christine Ebersole and be like, "Hey, can you come and sing for us? Can you come sing my ship?"
I'd love to see it done. I'd love to see it sort of, you know. And this brings up a topic that we could talk about another time. But you know. These pieces that are done in, you know, written in 1941 or whenever it was, and wanting to see it done again, but that knowing that there's problems in it, there's misogynistic problems in it, there's, you know, and then how can you reconcile that so that you can not erase history, but yet still be able to produce it if you wanted to, and not be horrified by some of the comment, like the lead actor, the love that she ends up with, he's like, walks in and there's models there and he pinches their butts. Now, did the guys do that in the 1930s and 40s? Probably. But, you know, do we need to see that? Do we need to see that sort of, I don't know. I don't know.
You know, my feeling is, and I don't know if this is the right opinion, but it's my opinion, is I think it's good to include that stuff just so we can see how far we've come.
I think so.
You know, just so people can go, oh my, I mean, the question is, does it take you out of the story? You know, but to see, like, yes, there was a time, as horrible as it was, where men could walk into a room and do this to women, and women did not have the power to say, don't do that. And I think that's important, not to lose that moment, so we can see how far the growth and the movement have become and why we never want to return back to that. Does that make sense?
Oh yes, and in the piece they do deal with it, because then she and he become equal, you know, because he wants to be in charge and she's in charge, and then they're like, well, how are we going to deal with that, you know? And then they say, well, he says, okay, sir, and she says, well, sir, you know, of course they're using the male pronoun in order to show power, but they're seeing each other as equals too. So because in 1941 version of trying to find equality, but it's still 1941. And
I think it's good to keep that stuff in there, because I think like it shows you this. Hey, this is what was going on, and this is why there's so much work and effort to change it. If you don't see what you're trying to change, then I think it sort of dampens the movement a little bit. So I think you can still do that. I think like putting a female identifying actor into the role of the analyst, I think that's a great call.
Smart.
That's a really, really great call. And Amy Irving, my God, what a good choice for that.
I wish I'd seen that.
I just remember her from Carrie. She's in Carrie, right? It's not Barbara Hershey. It's Amy Irving, right? In Carrie, where at the end she's like, movie? She goes to, yeah, remember at the end at Carrie, she's the only one that survives the prom.
Oh, right.
No spoiler alerts, anybody. But it's one of the best endings to a movie, right? She survived right. the prom, and she's going to lay flowers on Carrie White's grave, and all of a sudden Carrie's White's hand comes out from the grave and like yanks her in. No?
Wish they had that in a musical.
In Lady in the Dark or Carrie the...
No, no, Carrie. But Lady in the Dark, that would have been interesting too. I mean,
well, we're up for anything here. I'm so happy you chose that show, Kevin. I think that's marvelous, and I'm gonna listen to it today.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm really happy I got into it.
Can you sing Tchaikovsky? Can you the Danny K. Patterson song?
Talk about inane charm song for literally no reason. Because they get done with the song about, you know, but something about Russian, and it's actually really important to the story. And then the ringleader, because it's the circus dream, and the ringleader's like, Russian composers? I love Russian composers. And then for a minute and a half, he just rattles them off. And then they continue with the story.
So Fine with me. I'm so happy. You ever hear Mandy Patinkin sing Tchaikovsky on one of his albums?
No, I should.
I think I'm sure Robbie Rizzo will be like.
It up an octave.
Oh, he does. He does. I think it's either on his Experiment album or Dress Casual album.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Remember Experiment was the one where it was like 17 tracks, but they all ran one right into the other. Like he created like the world's longest medley. Do you remember that one?
Experiment. Yes. He's what it was called. Absolutely.
Yeah. It was an interesting time. We should get him on the show. I have so many questions. Talk to me.
Should. If you watch him on Twitter or Instagram, he lets his son just like go to town and his record everything.
What was it? Call Me Maybe? When he was like, it was like the son was like, hey, I just met you. And this is crazy, but here's my number. So call me. And he was like, beautiful sometime. You're like, no, it's not. No, it's not. It's Call Me Maybe. He had his own like, he had like, and he was sitting there like in his kitchen, like eating matzah. And he's just like, call me sometime, beautiful. You're like, no, it's Call Me Maybe. Call Me Maybe. So I'm so happy you mentioned that. Okay,
All right, what's your favorite thing?
Well, you know, I have to tell you, I love when things sort of like fall, like when fate happens and it feels a little bit like Kismet, not the musical Kismet. I'm going to be honest with you. Not a big fan of the musical Kismet. Huh. I'm sorry. Can I say that?
I like the score.
It's Ryan Forrest, isn't it?
I love this. And Bora Dean, I mean, it's classical music that's been adapted to.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I should rephrase. I do like the score. I am not a huge fan of like sitting watching a production of Kismet.
You've seen a production of Kismet?
I've seen a few productions of Kismet. I saw it. Here we go. My community theater, the Conejo Players, did it in a all culturally appropriated production of Kismet. That's a show we're never going to see anymore, by the way.
Never.
We should just that. Like,
brother. I mean, it's not going to happen.
What was the other one? What was the other one?
Oh, brother! Oh, brother! The one, you know, where the guys literally like there's something called OPEC Maiden. Meaning like the okay.
Yeah, we're not getting Kismet again. We're really not getting Oh Brother again. But yeah, the Conejo Players did it, and it was a production to say the least. And then I saw it in London with Faith Prince's Laloum in it. And Reprise in L.A. did it, and I can't remember who played Hajj in the L.A. production. but I'm sure...
Neil Patrick Harris.
It was Jason Alexander.
I feel like it's always Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh, he was always out there working.
What's the... who played... and when they came to Sweeney Todd at Philharmonic, who played Anthony, but he was like 45?
Davis Gaines. Davis Gaines.
Guaranteed Davis Gaines was in it. Guaranteed he was in it.
I'm going to look it up right now. Davis Gaines, he's an interesting person. I've worked with him a few times. Yep. I thought this is who I thought
Ron
it
Raines,
was.
Maybe Ron Raines? Is it Ron Raines? No, he was...
Nope. I thought it was this person, and I was like,
Richard Lewins?
You can't... No, ready? Here's the cast. Let's see. You're going to love this. Guess who played Hodge in this production? You're never going to guess in a million years, and I kind of love it. I will give you a clue. He was a former guest of ours very early on. Do you have any idea? He might have had an affair with Lauren Bacall when they did Applause together.
Len Carreyrou?
Len Carreyrou was Hodge the poet.
Oh,
Jason, I'm looking at the cast list now. Jason Graw was the wazir.
That's the one. I knew that Jason Graw. That's the other.
Oh, he did all of them. He did all of them.
Of course. Of course.
I love him. Anthony Crivello was the caliph. Yeah. And who was Laloum? Jennifer Lee Warren. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, but yes, I do. So anyway, I saw it at Canale Players. I saw it at Reprise, and I saw it in London with Faith Prince as Laloum. And
that's cool.
Kismet was done at the English National Opera. So it was like, money spent.
Yeah.
And it was really good.
She did that. Wow, that's cool.
She was great. Okay, so I'm sorry. We'll get back to Kismet, I'm sure, at some point. Not since Nineveh, not since time.
Okay, yep, we're done.
I will say, and this is My Beloved is a gorgeous song. Kismet is one of those shows, I think, what's the story behind it? That like it got bad reviews, but there was a newspaper strike, so nobody saw the bad reviews. And somehow the show was able to survive. Slipped through the cracks.
It was a hit.
I mean, and you are right. The score is gorgeous. And I'm sure Alfred Drake's stuff was amazing.
But, it still had its toes dipped in operetta. And that's why, because it's a throwback to that. You know, so
absolutely.
The audience still remembered going to see, The Merry Widow and whatnot.
Absolutely. So, okay. So going back to my favorite thing. I love when there's fate and I love when there's kismet. Because I was curious about this book I had heard about, and I was like, I want to buy a copy of it, but it is one of the hardest books to find. I finally found it on Amazon. I paid like $50 for it, but I was like, you know what, I really want to read this. And as I'm reading the book, we get a message on our Patreon from a listener named Ronald Scarlotta, and I put the book down to answer Ronald's message, which was, hello, if you haven't read it, I recommend No Pickle, No Performance, a wonderful book by Harold J. You have the book?
Yes, because someone said this is such a rare book and you have to get it. And I got it. And I was going to make it a favorite thing someday. I haven't read it yet, though.
I've taken it from you. I'm so sorry.
Yes, I love it.
Okay, so this book, folks, it's once again, it's hard to find, but Kevin has a copy. So ask Kevin. It's called No Pickle, No Performance from 1978. It's an irreverent theatrical excursion from Tallulah to Travolta by Harold J. Kennedy. Harold J. Kennedy was an actor and a director who ran a theater. He ran a bunch of different theater companies, and he actually had a couple of shows come to Broadway, believe it or not. He directed the Front Page revival in 1969, as well as a play we've talked about a couple of times on this podcast, especially with Josh Ellis, called Me, Jack, You, Jill. If you remember that one, which was like a big, big flop. And he worked with all of these different celebrities in Summer Stock. And so it's really a memoir of all of the crazy people he's worked with in Summer Stock and all of the crazy experiences he's had in Summer Stock. And it's very loving. It's very loving. It's dealing with a lot of like big movie stars that decided to go and do theater for a little bit, temperamental stars. And the first chapter of the book, and I'm not giving anything away, is where the title comes from, No Pickle, No Performance. He was doing Detective Story at the mall in Paramus. So that just like...
Which has come up a couple times. We've heard of this before.
And he ran a regional theater, I think, called the Gristmill. And I was like, that's an amazing name I've never once thought of for all the characters I do on this show, that would be a place that he would work at, the Gristmill.
Yeah, right.
And in No Pickle, No Performance, he's doing Detective Story on the mall in Paramus, and there's a character in there of a woman who shoplifts, and they cast the actress Renee Taylor. We know Renee Taylor because she was a marvelous playwright with her husband Joe Bologna, and if you're a fan of The Nanny, she plays Fran's mom on The Nanny. But what this is about is the fact that she rewrote her part in Detective Story. There was a line in Detective Story where she was like, I steal because like no man is ever going to love me. And she was like, I'm changing the line because who would believe I can't get a man? So she changed the line and stuff. But where No Pickle, No Performance comes is because in the show, she eats a sandwich on stage, and they had sandwiches for her in rehearsal, and they had sandwiches. And then on opening night, she said, this is not the same sort of sandwich that you had been giving me from all the rehearsals and not. And they said, what's the problem? And she said, there's no pickle on it. It was a Sunday night. All the delis and restaurants were closed. And they're like, can't you do the fucking show without a pickle? And she looked at them square in the eye and said, no pickle, no performance. And they slammed the door. And it's all about how they then tried to get a pickle for Miss Taylor to go on stage. It's a great book. It has great stories in here about Gloria Swanson. It has great stories in here about Helen Hayes, Moss Hart, Orson Welles, some really good stories in here about Orson Welles. But it's fun. And it's, you know, I will be honest with you. A lot of these memoir books that people write that aren't of like A-list caliber, it can feel very name-droppy. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, and this book doesn't feel that way. It feels like it's a celebration of the people he worked with. And I don't really get the sense that he's like trying to like boost his own career or boost his own identity. It's just, and we've all had this. I mean, listen, we've all worked in places and we've all worked with people that were like, I can't believe I'm working with this person right now. And I'm sure one day maybe we'll write our own book. But until then, until we come along with, I don't know, no... No drink ticket. I don't know. That's what we'll do. No drink ticket, no performance. Because at 54 Below, we pay you in drink tickets.
Exactly.
Until then, you can read Harold J. Kennedy's No Pickle, No Performance. It's pricey to get on Amazon, but I encourage you, you should pick it up because it's totally worth it. And very sweet, especially if you're an old movie fan. It carries even more weight for you. So that's mine for this week. No Pickle, No Performance.
Fantastic. I'm so glad that you brought that up. I remember years ago, but when we first started, Rob, we had a guest. And the reason why I bought the book is because somebody told us that story. Somebody, I don't know if it was on air or off air, but I bought it because someone said, oh, you should get this book. I don't remember
who. Yeah, I remember who.
I don't remember at all. But yeah, so I'm so glad that you brought it up, and I'm inspired to read it now that I, you know, have a reason.
Let me know. Yeah, let me know when you're done. We can have a book club. And I swear to you, as soon as we're done, I'm going to go listen to Lady in the Dark.
Okay. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so excited. All right, folks. We'll see you next time.
Have a great weekend. All right. Bye. See you later. Bye.
Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.